Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 64. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Zeb Spectre 4. As always, I'm Mikey B, and joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hello everyone.
And we also have Caitlin back with us.
Hello.
Hello. If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, or send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. You can also leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. We've also launched our Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. There are some really cool perks like Discord chat, recording studio, movie nights, After Dark episodes, all sorts of crazy stuff. Danya, Caitlin, what do you guys think about Patreon?
I don't know, Mikey. I'm not sure if I have any thoughts about it at all.
Wow.
Oh, I'm in a hashtag mood today, aren't I?
Yeah, you are. Hashtag Danya doesn't have any thoughts. Anyway, moving on from Patreon. We also have t-shirts and buttons available on our website. Check them out. Support the Resistance by rocking your Resistance Radio t-shirt. Let's start that again. Let's move on. Really? Okay, let's do this one more time. All right, it's time for the news. So, the Last Jedi promotional drink gives us our best look yet at Snoke's new red Imperial guards, or just type of guards that they're going to have. Praetor. I don't even know how to say that, Danya. It's a Roman name. It's Praetorian?
Yeah, I thought it was Praetorian. Yeah,
Here's the thing is, I can't speak half the time, guys. You know this. Oh gosh, I'm just waiting.
I'll Brock help.
Thank you, Praetorian. Exactly. I have trouble speaking. You guys know this. Anyway,
I know.
Our best really? Look at our Praetorian.
My favorite part is he runs the podcast.
Mikey's just like, why do I let either of you on here with me?
Yeah. Like,
I feel like I should pack up my toys. I feel like I should pack up my toys and go home. Just be like, I'm done with you kids. Stop playing in my sandbox.
He's gonna start. Yeah, you'll start stomping his feet. Where's Ben?
I can't even say it right now. It's Praetorian. Praetorian. I still. Anyway.
There so you go. These, you got it.
I got it. I think I can. I'm growing. Yeah. I'm like a big boy. Anyway. The Galactic Vitamin Drink, known as Star Wars: The Last Jedi Space Punch. Has at least four different characters on it, including BB-8, which looks pretty cool, as well as Phasma. But it gives us an interesting look at these kind of special guards that are going to be with Snoke. You know, what's really interesting is we've seen a lot of Red Royal Imperial Guards, Praetorian-type guards. We saw them in the Battlefront 2 trailer with the Emperor's face on the Royal Guard, but we also read about that inside the third book in the Windig book series, Empire's End. Geez, my mind is like all over the place today. So we read about them with there are these guards with like a robot head, or they're robots that have like the Emperor's memory in them and stuff like that. So we've seen a lot of these interesting kind of characters. What do you guys think of Snoke having emperor-like guards?
Typical.
Yeah, I was going to say, it kind of seems a little bit expected. I don't know that we kind of would have imagined there wouldn't have been any at all.
The reason why I think it's weird is like, all right, so the Emperor had his guards, right? Vader didn't really have guards. You know, Kylo Ren didn't really have guards. None of the Rebels or the Resistance have, like, guards, like, that are in special uniform type things. So I've always just kind of assumed, like, those Imperial guards were, like, special for the Emperor. And, like, there's no more official canon lore about them. But, you know, at one point, they were, like, some of the most loyal stormtroopers. Some of them were known to be clones still. Like, they were, like, the most loyal for the Emperor, which makes sense. So, it's interesting that, you know, Snoke is literally this embodiment of the Emperor. Now, the question is, how close to the embodiment of the Emperor is he? You know, is he someone who started anew, just like what we saw at the end of Empire's End? Or is it, you know, some other... You know, Snoke came from somewhere else, and he's been around for a long time, like we, you know, we saw in Force Awakens, where it was always Snoke. I think that might have been just in the novelization, though. So, any thoughts on that, guys?
Meh.
Okay.
More bad guys with a different costume.
All right, so here's the last question. Any thoughts on Space Punch? Do you guys know what it tastes like?
Guaranteed that there's going to be some kind of orange base to it, which means.
See, I was thinking red because, like, of all the color from the cans, but maybe.
Usually, maybe whenever orange. They want to like do like a punch of some kind or some kind of fruity flavor, it's usually like even if orange isn't the main flavor, to kind of make up most of it, they put orange in it. I cannot drink it, so I bet you any. I'm allergic to oranges.
I didn't know that.
Random.
I'm allergic to orange. I'm allergic to orange juice from concentrate, not real orange juice or oranges, but just concentrate orange juice.
Oh,
it's bad.
That's
interesting.
That's such a weird thing to kind of have in common. It's like,
I know, right? Anyway, let's move on to. I know, right? Never tell me the odds, Danya. You know this thing. Anyway, moving on. So I tweeted about this a while ago, but an authentic R2-D2 unit, an actual R2 unit from the Star Wars set, goes up for auction, and it starts at $1 million, as well as the lightsaber that Luke used in episode 4 and 5, so A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. So technically it's Anakin's lightsaber that Luke had, and I guess it's also the same lightsaber that is in, you know, Force Awakens with Rey, have all gone up for auction, which I think is pretty cool that, you know, they're auctioning off these memorabilia things. I don't know if the money's going to charity, or it's just they just made it to auction because the person had them. But I don't know. What do you guys think about this? Like, actual Star Wars memorabilia is going out for auction.
I mean, if I had anywhere near the money that these things would go for, I would probably want that lightsaber. But...
Yeah.
And here's the thing. You don't just need the money. You need the money in excess.
Yeah.
That's like, true.
I have just $2 million just floating around. Why don't I buy this, not to say it's a trinket or junk, but like, just like a...
like the Millennium Falcon?
Bring and brag. Like a bring and brag kind of thing.
Yeah.
And also, the lightsaber is
just... It's definitely something that if you have it... Like, if you're a person who has, like, a Picasso on the wall, you're the same person who's going to have a lightsaber sitting next to it. Maybe you have the same taste as, you know, Picasso and lightsabers, but it's definitely interesting to see that actual Star Wars memorabilia is up for auction and sale. And I just think it's kind of cool that that stuff's making out to fans, obviously very rich fans, but that's kind of cool. I don't know. I like it. I would love to have a chance at owning or even just being able to play with like a real life R2-D2, yep. Not just one that like a fan builds, even though I will say the fan built ones are amazing, but the actual one would be kind of amazing to see.
Like I said on Twitter, because someone approached being like, hey, if we pool all of our all of our money and resources, we could totally get the lightsaber and have shared custody. And I was like, sure, I've got $10 and a mostly empty packet of Tic Tacs.
Like how they were like, oh, good, we can bid with fresh breath.
Yes.
But those Tic Tacs are worth a lot, my friend. anyway, yeah, so we have stuff up for, you know, up for sale. Not us, but, you know, they do. At invaluable.com. Star Wars Battlefront 2 made a huge appearance at E3 for EA. It will fill the gaps between episodes 6 and 7. The storyline is supposed to be very significant and it is considered canon, along with the tie-in novel Inferno Squad. So it should be interesting to see what lore is introduced between 6 and 7. I feel like this is going to tie right into after Empire's End, kind of seeing how the rise of the First Order kind of takes place. What do you guys think about this? Do you guys see the new trailer for it?
I did not. The funny thing about this week, I spent most of my weekend, so Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I was traipsing around the woods with no phone signal, and I had Wi-Fi only when I stood in, like, specific parts of the house I was staying in. It's like that rural. It's like middle of nowhere, basically off the grid. I got back Monday and pretty much went straight into getting ready for my birthday, and I have not really been keeping up with anything this week. So I've missed, like, most of the E3 news. Like, I know that there's a lot out there and people have been going nuts about it, but I have not caught up on any of it yet. Because my birthday week always ends up being nuts in some way or another. So I always miss out on news when things are going on. But last year it was because we were at Indy.
Yes, it was. I was going to say, and in other news, it was Danya's birthday this week, and we wanted to wish her a happy birthday, but you just totally ruined the surprise in the notes, Danya. Thank you.
Oh, but whoops, going back I didn't even to, you, see that oops, in the notes. Yeah.
It's not in the news.
Yeah, well, there we go then.
Put you on the spot. That's why. Anyway, talking about Battlefront 3, or Battlefront 2, not 3. I guess it's the fourth game, technically, so I wasn't well, right anywhere with Battlefront 2. So the storyline will follow it. The really cool part about this, if you haven't had a chance, take a look at the new trailer. It does have some amazing footage from all three trilogies. I think it's really cool to be able to play as a battle droid. Like, they have game footage of the battle droids playing. I know this is something me, Eric, were really excited about. If you want to play with me and Eric on PS4 at some point, just tweet at me. I will give you my PS4 handle so you can join us when this launches, because I'm sure it's going to be absolutely ridiculous and I will probably die many a times. But I am beyond ecstatic about the new Battlefront 2 and the footage that it has. Moving on, one of my favorite bit of news stuff that came out, I actually got to see these in person, is Petco has some Star Wars-inspired pet options for your dogs and cats. I will say one of my favorite ones is the earmuffs for your cat, which will make them have the Princess Leia buns. I'm a huge fan of that myself. There's also chew toys that are lightsabers, Darth Vader chew toys, Yoda, chew bone.
I kind of like
Chewbacca.
I was gonna say I kind of like the Han Solo mouse. That one's really.
Oh yeah, the mouse. Yeah. So you know, there's a lot of really cool things in here. The Chewbacca,
the
Han Solo mouse toy, and Chewbacca mouse toy. But I will say, it's just one of those things where I can imagine. Like, I put costumes on my cat. I'll admit this. Like, one of my cats absolutely enjoys wearing costumes. My wife has gotten him multiple costumes. Like during Halloween, he has this awesome Hulk Smash costume that, like, he puts on, and it's one of those things where, like, we'll take it off of him, put it away, he'll go climb up on the shelf to grab it and bring it to us. Like, he wants to put it on.
Aww.
So I'm trying to convince my wife to let me buy some of the Star Wars costumes for him, because I know he'll just adore wearing them. Except right now, during the summer, it's too hot for him to be putting anything on. But
see,
yeah.
We bought my dog a Darth Vader outfit once, and I've never seen a more sorrowful Darth Vader in my life. She just looked at my mother like, how are you letting them do this to me?
He was channeling the dark side?
No, she just looked really sad.
Aww. That is so sad. So this last bit of news before we get into our spotlight topic, I'm going to hand it on over to Danya. And I'll be back in like 10 minutes or so. So... Resistance Radio listeners, enjoy.
So, for the first time, I get to actually talk about hockey and have it be completely on topic for a Star Wars podcast. So, courtesy of my friends over at Russian Machine Never Breaks, which is a Washington Capitals blog that covers all of the news to do with the Washington Capitals, they ran a story about the Capitals captain, Alexander Ovechkin. Now, what he is doing is he is taking part in an auction run by one of his friends, Lena Pimenova, and he is offering to dress up as Darth Vader to raise money for a sick child. And the auction started at about $865, and about 5 hours later had reached $17,241. He also filmed a mini commercial to promote him getting involved in it. And honestly, the costume is the most inaccurate thing that I've ever seen, but it is so funny. He's basically using Kylo Ren's lightsaber. I'm actually completely shocked that he's not wearing flip-flops and a hockey jersey with it.
He's trying, okay? He's at least trying with the lightsaber.
Oh,
at least
the lightsaber color is red. He is. He's trying.
But I will say,
it's really sweet. It's so sweet. He's such a nice guy, and he does stuff like this all the time, and I love him.
I will say, I guess I'll call it sweet. Just seeing his smile at the end and everything like that, you know, he is missing a couple teeth there. You know, he's a hockey player.
He's a hockey player.
He's a hockey player. So, but like, it is sweet, you know, and I think obviously he's doing it for a great cause. So, yeah. That's what it is. It's hockey and Star Wars. So, Danya, you've made it. It's happened. 64 episodes later, it's happened.
Yes, the intersection between two of my great loves, Star Wars and ice hockey. Finally. No, do you know that they do Star Wars night? At hockey games. Yeah. So you go dressed up as Star Wars characters.
And on next week's episode, Danya will find us clips so she can continue talking to us about hockey and Star Wars at the same time.
Now, I will tell you, my favorite is like all the different comments about the Kylo Ren lightsaber with him in a Darth Vader costume.
Yeah.
There's quite a few of them here.
I mean,
and one of my other favorite comments is, I love how in Russia, Darth Vader is a superhero.
It's so true. It's so true. Though, keeping this slightly on topic again, Mikey, did you know that Dano, our sometimes guest host, is also a fan of ice hockey? Because I did not know that.
Yes, I have. I did know that for a very long time.
I had no idea. We are bitter rivals in our teams, but I had no idea that he also liked ice hockey. So clearly, he needs to come back on the podcast sometime soon, just so that we can talk hockey. But it won't be recently because his team won the Stanley Cup, and I'm mad at him and his team.
Disgusting. On better news, did you see the poster that somebody created for The Force Awakens with all the different players?
The Capitals players?
Yeah.
Or...
I think it's...
Yes, yeah. The one that's in the comments.
I don't know much about the Caps.
Yeah, I did. Is it the one that's in the comments?
Yeah,
because it's got, like, Holtby and Obi and Nikki and Barry Trotz is in there as well. Yeah, no, I've seen that. I love it. I may actually be tempted to try and find a bigger version of it to print out. What?
We expect it next
time. I'm nothing if not hashtag on brand.
Anyway, moving on to our spotlight topic, Agarazeb Zeb Aurelius, Spectre 4. So we talked about Spectre 1, 2, and 3. Now we have Spectre 4. And I will tell you this. I love Zeb. He is... He's like the uncle that needs to be told that, no, that something's wrong. Even though, like, he does it anyway. But he's got a good heart. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah, actually... Blurt in the notes.
I was going to say like no. I am not.
Slash cantankerous uncle, but.
Okay, well, tell us no, Danya. What do you, I don't know. Zeb is an interesting character. Tell us, Don, what you thought.
Then. No. I meant I don't think I get what you're getting at. What I'm trying to say. Yeah. That's what I all meant. Right. I was like, I'm not entirely sure what you mean.
Well, Zeb is kind of a cranky big kid. Like, he has to be told. Like, Hera kind of has. Basically, just to put in perspective, when you see episodes of Zeb and Rebels, it's usually Zeb and Ezra. Zeb and Ezra both get in trouble, even though Zeb is not a little kid like Ezra. And Ezra's not even a little kid. Ezra is like, you know, he's a teenager, right? And Zeb is not a teenager by any means. You know, he was in the Lestat, you know, what do you call it? Royal Army. Like, he was there for honor a long time. Yeah, he was the honor guard. Thank you. So he's not like this little kid, but him and Ezra, they steal a TIE fighter. They go hide it instead of getting rid of it. He doesn't realize, you know, leaving Ezra behind as some snot-nosed kid when they first meet him is not a bad thing to do. Obviously, it is. So they have to, you know, so like he's morally, he is a good person. But there's a little, like, he doesn't understand why some things he does is not right. Does that make more sense, Danya?
So basically what you're saying is he's chaotic good.
Sure. I don't know if I would describe it that way, but that makes well, sense, yeah.
Do you play D&D? Do you do alignments? Because that's what... Do either of you play D&D? Yeah, or was that, like...
I do, and that would make sense, yeah. I guess that's if you had to align them that way, that's how you would.
So. I think the best description of him came from the Lyra San episode, and that he's described as the child, the fool, and the warrior. Because the minute they were like, "Oh, we need these three people," I'm like, "It's all of one person, and that's Zeb."
Exactly, because he's like a child. He's a fool sometimes, and he's a warrior. So yeah, I think you're right. Maybe that's the best description. Zeb is the child, the fool, and the warrior. But, real quick, his real name is Garazeb Aurelios. He's a male Lestat. He served as a rebel alongside the crew of the Ghost after his race was almost entirely wiped out by the Empire. Which I think that's interesting, that the Lestats, you know, just as a, you know, as a species, was essentially, you know, suffered from genocide by the Empire. Like, this is a huge thing, and I think it's weird that, you know, I guess it's okay that it's not mentioned in the movies, but it's something they mentioned there in the show, and it's kind of brushed over. And I guess it's a kid show, so you can't really focus on genocide and the outrage of it, and just kind of like how it's like how it has taken a toll on him and those who know him. But I feel like it's a huge like thing that kind of helps build his character. Would you guys agree?
Would say that the near genocide. His people builds character.
Well, it built out. No, not builds character. It built out who he. Oh my gosh. Jeez, Danya. It built his character specifically. It shaped him. Forged him as a warrior, but he still has that good childlike heart. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would wonder how much of that is him and how much that is him sort of clinging to a person he desperately longs to be, because, you know, the near genocide of your people, of your race, is not something that's ever easy to like try and come to terms with. So it's like an interesting balance between I guess having to deal with that, but also still wanting to be the person that you always were. I don't know. It's such an interesting balance that they have between what has happened to him versus who Zeb is. And I really like Zeb a lot. I think he's a really great character.
Do we know how much time frame there was between the genocide of his people and when he joined the Ghost / we see him in the beginning of Rebels?
No, we don't. And that's why it's kind of, you know. So the weird part about this, so let's just talk about this part of Zeb real quick. So Lira San is the, you learn about Lira San in an episode with Zeb, which is kind of, you described it as, he's the child, the fool, and the warrior. This is the mythical homeworld, or I guess not mythical homeworld, but it's the original homeworld of the Lestat species. It's the site where Lestat's rebuilding efforts following the fall of their second home, which is Lasan. So the genocide happened on Lasan, where he was an honor guard there. The really cool part about this whole like little bits of lore that we've got from Zeb as a character, I think, is Lira San is located in Wild Space, which is beyond the Outer Rim. Well, guess what other character is also from Wild Space, beyond the Outer Rim? It's Thrawn. We also hear more about this in the Thrawn novel, where you have Eli Vanto, who goes to the Chiss Ascendancy out there. So I'm really interested to kind of see if Rebels uses this anywhere, or if a book or a comic or some type of media will link Lira San, the Lestat species, Thrawn, the Chiss, like all this stuff that's in, you know, Wild Space together at some point in time. Not now, but they've planted the seeds at a really kind of like this, like random, like, you know, kind of almost like a random happenstance of a backstory for a character. What do you guys think of just kind of the idea of what has happened is obviously something horrible for him, but the Lira San story arc, the new planet that is in Wild Space, and they were able to navigate to it.
I mean, right, okay. Stepping back ever so slightly to, like, break this down into smaller bits. So, when it comes to, like, do I think that we're gonna, well, if we're gonna see or hear more about Lira San, or we're gonna, like, move in that direction, you know, I think the seeds are there, like you said. And I think it would be really, really interesting to see that explored and expanded on more. I don't think it'll happen in Rebels. I think they have way too much to wrap up in season 4 to be able to give the amount of time that they need to Lira San in order to really dig into it and the idea of it and everything to do with what happened to Zeb and his people. But considering it's so close to Thrawn and Thrawn's story, I wouldn't be shocked if in some kind of spin-off material, whether that's a comic or a novel or any kind of tie-in information, that we wouldn't get it. Like, it would be really surprising if we didn't get anything at all. I just feel like it'll probably be a tie-in rather than Rebel itself. I think that maybe if Rebels was going to go to a season 5, which we know that it's not, we know officially season 4 is the last one, but I feel like if Rebels was going to go to a season 5, then maybe yes, we would have seen it there. But I would really love to see more about Lira San and just everything about the Lestat homeworld and just anything and everything surrounding that, because,
well, and we know there's that, like, because before they thought it was myth, or at least Zeb did, and we know that's the original homeworld.
So they thought it was myth and legend.
We don't know how populated it is, because he never actually went.
Mm-hmm. But we know they can get back there, because Hera made the comment afterwards that once they've made it through, you know, the plot of the course, the ghost can always get back there. So I almost wonder if they decide not to. So here's the thing is, Spectre 4, Zeb, gives us so much story arc for the future of the Rebel, you know, the crew of the ghosts, right? The Rebels. So this would also explain, like, after the Battle of Scarif, if they decided to go to Lirisan and do something on that end, that would totally explain why they're not in the original trilogy. They can come back afterwards. Because they were off in Wild Space. And it's this character, Zeb, who gives them that opportunity to do that. Because I'll be honest with you, I would be really, really heartbroken to find out that at the end of Season 4, it leads up to the Battle of Scarif, and we see part of it, and we see that they all die there. Like, that would make me really sad about the crew of the Ghost. Not to say that it can't happen, because we know they were there, and we know Ezra and Kanan aren't around for the original trilogy, because the Jedi are extinct, and the Rebel Alliance, you know, kind of holds Luke at this higher level, because he is a Jedi, even though he's not yet. So, I'm really excited that, you know, the story group, you know, and Dave Filoni, the way they've treated Zeb as that character. But I do want to talk about Zeb and his relationship with the members of the Ghost crew. So, first of all, the first person you have to think about Zeb and his relationship is with Chopper. And I love this, Caitlin, that you put here, that he's got a frenemy relationship with Chopper. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, they're always bickering. Like, you think Ezra and Zeb are bad, but Chopper and Zeb are worse. And I feel like they thoroughly enjoy on getting on each other's nerves.
They're almost like an old married couple.
Yeah.
Can you imagine them sitting on a porch, like, drinking, like, tea? You know, Zeb and Chopper, you know, then beeping. He's like, this is the life. You're right. And then something goes on.
No, oh, they man, wouldn't. They wouldn't agree that this is the life. They'd be like arguing with each other. Chopper would probably be like, "What is this nonsense? Like tea? I can't drink that."
That's true. Yes, you're right.
Feel free to bleep that out. By the way, we all know that droids are like foul mouthed.
Yeah. Let's be honest, they swear anyway. We just don't
hear
it. The droids
are the most, you know, they use some pretty foul language. You just don't hear it that often because it's all beeps.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Like I said.
All right, well then, okay.
Droid bleep that out for our younger viewers, listeners.
Oh, I use choppers.
Yes. Please bleep it out using choppers.
To-do list for Mikey.
All right, I will definitely do that. Thank you. Making my editing more work. But, all right, so beyond his relationship with Chopper as a frenemy slash old married couple, which you guys just totally ruined my happy ending of them hanging out on the porch, you know, watching the sunset, drinking sweet tea or something. What do you guys think about the growth of relationship between Ezra and Zeb? Obviously, when they first meet each other, Zeb just thinks he's a snot-nosed kid and doesn't really care about him. He's so much so they leaves him behind. And causes Ezra to get captured. Eventually, I feel like they have a almost like a buddy cop type relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Not the old married couple that you have with Chopper, but like a buddy cop relationship where one's good, one's bad almost sometimes. Especially when they know they're going to get in trouble. Like, think about, like, if you think of like a Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker, like in, you know, Rush Hour or something like that. And, you know, you have Hera being like the sergeant or something. And she's like, where'd you put that, you know, TIE fighter? And of course, like, we destroyed it. We crashed it. It's all right. Of course, they didn't crash it. They hid it away. Which it came back to be useful at some point in time later on. But what do you guys think about that relationship there?
I love it. I love the growth of it. Because especially, I mentioned, I think, a while back that I started rewatching season one again. And it's just so interesting to see the growth of the characters, especially because they've come so far to the point where we see them in season three. I mean, so much has happened to them over that amount of time. There's been so much loss, but they've found so much strength in each other, and then fledgling rebellion as well. But yeah, the relationship, particularly between Zeb and Ezra, I feel like a lot of Zeb's kind of resistance to Ezra at the start was feeding into it a little bit, was probably this idea that the Ghost crew, as they were almost like his family, and Ezra was just this upstart little kid who was sort of upsetting that balance. He was endangering them in some way, and he wasn't, like, not necessarily an asset. I don't think Zeb's ever been that cold, but I feel like it was this kind of threat to this precarious kind of safety that they have. And so seeing him move from that relationship where Ezra, out of anyone, was the most expendable in order to protect and ensure the safety of the rest of the Ghost crew, to where they are by the time you get to season 3 is just incredible. Like, that journey just all in is wonderful. And yeah, they're kind of, I mean, Zeb's always kind of a little bit of a grump. He's basically the grumpy old man of the crew. But it's still such an important relationship, I think. I really, really like how they play off each other. So I really hope that we get more of them in season 4. Because I feel like sometimes they don't spend enough time together. I just really love their dynamic. So I hope that before Rebels completely wraps up, that we might get, like, even just them off on a solo mission sort of thing together. I really enjoy when they do go off together, because it's just a recipe obsessed.
Yeah, because maybe it's me blurring all the seasons together, but I felt at the beginning there was a lot of Zeb and Ezra, and then it's just naturally, because of the way, like, the story works, it's become more Ezra and Kanan.
Yeah, and I think that's, I think, you know, early on, Ezra probably identified more as a relationship with Zeb, because they had the ability to get in trouble together, you know.
Well, and they bunked together.
Yeah, they bunked together, they're roommates. You know, in my mind, I see, you know, Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn style kind of, you know, shenanigans going on with these two kids. I guess Zeb's not a kid. But then as Ezra starts to grow, he falls down, you know, early on at the beginning of season 3, I think most of us would have predicted that he would fall down the dark side. But he's made a complete recovery from that. It's come back. So I think that kind of experience of losing Ahsoka, who was a Jedi kind of a aspiration for him, even though she didn't see herself as Jedi. Kanan losing his eyesight, and Ezra really taking pride in becoming a Jedi and wanting to train has put him more, not to say that he's actually matured at all that much. Like, you can see he's matured quite a bit. He's no longer got the Aladdin hair, so there's an obvious visual cue. But it's one of those things where he has definitely matured from season 1 and early season 2, him and Zeb palling around, causing stuff, and that's where you see more Ezra and Kanan. And I think they're, you know, again, Kanan is Spectre 1, so he's kind of the leader there, so you kind of follow him and Ezra's story throughout the entire series. So we'll just see what season 4 has to bring for Zeb as it goes. One of my favorite parts about Zeb, though, is if it wasn't for Zeb befriending ISB Agent Kallus, when they were trapped on the moon of Geonosis, I don't think Kallus would have turned. What do you guys think?
You know, I mean, that's okay. Caitlin, you go.
Like, it depends how they would have written it. Like, there could have been another circumstance where a rebel or a crew of the Ghost was paired with Kallus, and he kind of saw the companionship and family, like, vibe of the Ghost and the Rebellion, which would have made him question his choices. But I think it really worked with Zeb, because he's also gruff, but he's still bent, and, like, he could have left Kallus down there for dead, and he didn't.
Oh yeah, no, he totally could have. But the fact that, you know, they had the beacon and stuff like that, and he even offered to, you know, have Kallus go with them, I think is a huge thing. So I agree. I think, like, Zeb, well, I think it's also, there was a couple things too, because Zeb and Kallus had multiple confrontations together, both as an honor guard, where you know, you saw that Callus actually participated in, you know, of the slaughter of his people. So the fact that Zeb was able to overcome that and then work together, and Callus was able to see that, no, my, you know, that Zeb has family in the crew of the Ghost, and overcome that, that definitely, I think, was a turning point for Callus, if you guys would agree. I know, Danya, you had something else you wanted to say.
No, I was, so I was going to say, I feel like, of all of the members of the crew of the Ghost that could have been the catalyst for Callus's turn away from the Empire and towards the Rebellion, Zeb, for me, is the most interesting one. Because in terms of, like, that morally good character and everything that you assume of them and what they need to symbolize, and sometimes the kind of hero on the pedestal that's kind of held up to scrutiny and needs to, is usually the kind of character that sways the morals of someone on the other side. Like, Zeb is probably quite far away from that ideal that you would expect to fit into that role. Zeb is far more pragmatic, I think, and far more, I guess, it's a little bit to do with, like, his more gruff demeanor as well. And I feel like for Callus, that pragmatism, that kind of attitude, that personality, paired or played off this idea that he's still very compassionate and loyal and very true to himself, is something that very likely that combination struck a chord specifically with him, because in a certain way, he probably sees a lot of himself in Zeb as well, because we know Callus is, he isn't all sweet, fluffy, sunshine and rainbows and all of that stuff. So I feel like in terms of who could have been the catalyst for Callus's turn, Zeb was the right choice. I'm not sure that it would have gone as successfully had it been anyone else. Not to discredit anyone else as being able to give him a change of heart, but just the, for some reason that works, that fits. There's something about it that just apparently makes a lot of sense. And even from a story perspective, the fact that it was Zeb is just, it makes for a richer story, because you would think that of all the people that would be held up to that kind of role, it would be someone like Ezra, or it would have been Hera, or Kanan, or any of those, the, you know, the ones that take on a more traditionally heroic kind of role within the story, rather than Zeb, who is undoubtedly heroic, but his demeanor, his attitude, his behaviors, and just his personality in general doesn't fit into that mold of what ideally would code as a savior that would turn someone's opinion. So for me, like, that, it was just this, like, subversion of expected roles. Just, like, everything to do with the episode where they get trapped together is just, in general, was an incredible bit of storytelling, and it's still one of my favorite episodes.
No, it's definitely, it was one of those episodes, that episode right there obviously brought Zeb along further as a character, but it also, I think we talked about how it also showed you, it planted the seed for the episode of Saw Gerrera and that crew going back there, not necessarily to the moon, but back to Geonosis, because they had scouted something that was going on. So I again, the writing on Rebels is very intricate, and I love that all these things get tied together, and I love that a character like Zeb is there. What do you guys think about him becoming the babysitter for someone like Chopper and AP5, specifically in the episode Guarding Chopper Base? You know, he, you know, this is where you see that relationship with Chopper, but now we have this new character, AP5, integrated. I know, Caitlin, you just finished watching those episodes. What did you think of that episode of Zeb and his character?
I thought it was a perfect episode for Zeb. Because I think he believes what... Like, I feel like there's the stereotype that he's just the brawn, and he doesn't offer mm-hmm. much else. And I think he believes that as well as, like, as AP5 voiced. And I think in the episode, they all realize that he's more than that. Because he is the one who came up with the idea of sending the droid back to blow up the ship. So he made his mistake work in their favor. So there is brains behind the bronze as well. That, and it was just entertaining to watch the three different personalities work and not work together.
I would agree with that. We have the three different personalities grouped together. It does. It shows that Zeb definitely can be a leader. I don't think he gets the opportunity as often. We've seen even, you know, Ezra lead missions and, Zeb has to kind of follow along. We see that with different, you know, with Hondo and some of the episodes and stuff. You know, Zeb has had an opportunity to lead, but I think there's only a handful of them. Not very many. So that episode specifically, just one scene, his relationship with Chopper that we kind of talked about earlier, of the kind of an old married couple. And I think throwing AP5 in there, that was more like even a mother kind of going like, no, you should be doing this. This is not organized. This, you know, those types of things. Cause you know, AP5 would be happy just cataloging the entire galaxy and organizing all the stars even. But, you know, it's one of those things where it does show that he can lead. He was able to resolve a problem and was able to find it, you know, and find the solution, which was to send the droid back and have it explode. Although, I guess in the end, it did hurt because that gave Thrawn an ability to triangulate their position of Chopper Base.
Yeah.
Donnie, any thoughts about that episode?
No, I mean, pretty sure we broke down that episode on the podcast as well, didn't we? I remember.
Yeah, we broke it down pretty significantly. So that episode definitely got covered quite a bit.
Yeah, I really like that. I like that episode quite a lot as well. I think I remember enjoying it. I enjoyed most of season 3, honestly.
Oh yeah, no, season 3 was actually a really good season for Rebels. I think it gave it the ability to kind of grow because you also saw season 2 set it up so good because you saw the introduction of Maul and you had Ezra not knowing where to go. It had, you know, it gave different characters like AP5, Chopper, and Zeb to actually shine, including, which we'll talk about next week, we'll talk about, you know, Spectre 5 and Sabine and all the Mandalorian lore that we kind of got to talk about and we've talked about on the show before.
I think the one thing that I said was my biggest criticism of season 3 was the ordering of the episodes and the dragging out of like the tension and stuff. I feel like there was a different order that they could have done the episodes in to make it work a little bit more successfully for me, but like individually all of the episodes were incredible. But I really did enjoy guarding Chopper Base. Like, I love stuff like bottle episodes. When they're done well, they're so good. When they all take place in basically one location, just, and when the stakes are incredibly high and there's no like immediate way out, like those can create so much great tension. And the fact that they have like so little time in which to create it is, and resolve it then as well, because Rebels episodes are quite short. The fact that they managed to turn that around and make it such a rich, deep episode is certainly a credit to the entire team behind Rebels. So, yeah, no, I really enjoy that episode a lot.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. So, anything else that I missed about Zeb? One thing I want to ask before we kind of wrap up the show is, what do you guys think Zeb will do in season 4? Will he go down fighting? Will he...
That's his quote in the trailer for season 4. That he'd rather go down fighting. And so I was like, oh! I watched it again, if you couldn't tell.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what do you guys, what do you think is, you know, what do we have, you know, to expect from, or, you know, do we hope from for Zeb in season four?
Maybe more bonding time with hashtag Hot Callus.
Yeah, I'd love to see him and Callus teaming up a little bit, or even just a, like, because obviously it's going to be really difficult, this being the last season, being able to develop friendships and relationships that are sort of fledgling to the extent that we would probably want them to. I don't think it's going to be feasible in a season that is also going to have to wrap up the entire show. So I would love to at least see them working together. I think that would be great if we had like little small moments of them together. I really would like that. I think it's also realistic to imagine that as much as it's going to hurt us, a lot of the characters probably aren't going to make it out of the season. Just by virtue of the fact of where A New Hope begins, particularly with Obi-Wan and Yoda and the state of the Jedi in general. You know, we know that Obi-Wan is aware of Ezra now. We know that he is also aware of Kanan, I believe. So his words to Luke specifically about the state of the Jedi, that is significantly more telling when it comes to A New Hope. So I feel like, realistically speaking, there are going to be a lot of characters that aren't making it out. Is Zeb going to be one of them? Difficult to tell, because they have more leeway with a character like Zeb to continue to use him, because we don't really, outside of the scope of Rebels, have reference to the Lysette. So there's at least more scope to be able to continue to include him in tie-in material. But undoubtedly, if he is to go down, he will go down fighting and fighting hard. We know that. But
this is really sad, but like, part of the reason why he's so cantankerous is because he feels guilt for being on the honor guard and yet the royal family still being killed, and like basically the genocide of his people. So I can see him pulling Sato and sacrificing himself to save one or more members of the Ghost crew. But I prefer the theory of him, like, you know, flying off into the sunset to go live peacefully on Lyra San. But
for me, I know you guys, I kind of want that peaceful, like, ending, going to Lyra San, and like, maybe, I don't know, just like, Zeb is this character that has a link to, you know, we said it at the end of our Thrawn episode, like, I want an Eli Vanto book. I want to know more about Wild Space, so I know what this other threat is. Is that other threat Snoke? Is it something else? You know, who knows what's out there? You know, but Lyra San's also out there, and Zeb is a good guy out there versus, you know, following only the bad guys, if you will. So I kind of want him to go with like Ezra, and they flee because they're told to, and then they come back later, and you see him kind of be, you know, influence, you know, something between 6 and 7. You know, who knows? Maybe that's just me wishful thinking. All right. Anything else about Gera Zeb Aurelius Spectre 4?
Carabast,
exactly. That's his saying. I want to say Carabast. That's what the title should be called. This episode should be called.
That's Carabast. What I made it. I put it at the top of the dock.
There you go. All right. So thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @rradiopodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
Carabast! And may the Force be with you.
And also with
you.
What?